This is Comic Geek Speak, episode 1703, Comic Talk. You got it on Wednesday, and it was like about to go until the volume up. These guys will talk about it, everything the geeks love. Okay, so laser beams, opinions like the seasons on everything you read. Uniting the world's mightiest heroes, this is...
I'm Adam Murdo.
I'm Chris Everly.
And I'm Brian Deemer.
Comic Geek Speak! Ah, the glorious co-founder has joined us. Mr. Deemer, we are honored.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Thank you, brother. Thank you very much. Just in case listeners are wondering, we are trying a different approach to recording. We're using a Skype recorder as we are all cast to the winds, as is often the case in the summer. Nobody's actually in the studio right now. So thanks to Mr. Deemer's technological knowledge, we've found a way to record outside the studio, and hopefully this test run will work quite well. So we're going to start with a comic talk. We all haven't talked to each other in a while. Murd especially has been missing in action due to familial obligations. Murd, how the hell are you?
Oh, I'm the hell fine, Chris. Thank you for asking. My father's the specific nature of the obligations to which refer is that my father had to go in for a second round of carpal tunnel surgery, through which he came with flying colors. They found a pinched nerve, which they cleaned out, and now he still has a cast on his hand, which is making him go a little bit stir crazy here. He can't do all the things he normally does, but for a little while there, I did need to cover his shifts at the Christmas shop, which is why, you know, for one reason why I haven't been a part of the episodes lately, the other being that I haven't exactly been Skype compatible lately. But, you know, our fearless leader and chief technologist and troubleshooter, Brian, found a very simple solution to this problem. He just applied a few dollars from the show treasury to buy an inexpensive Skype-ready tablet, which I am cradling in my palm right now as I'm talking to you guys. So thank you very much for your patience. Thank you, Ryan, for your expertise, and I'm happy to be back.
Hear, hear, brother. And Mr. Deemer, how the hell are you?
I'm very well, you know, just going through life, doing my thing.
Forgive me, I'm guffawing, because that could mean so many things when you use such a vague catchphrase like that.
Well, you know, I mean, you know me, right? I always have passions, and I'm usually indulging at least one of them in any given time, and you know, sometimes those passions are comics, and sometimes there are a million other things, right? Yeah. So,
I count on that, my friend. I count on that. And as for me, you know, I'm just enjoying being a teacher, and that I'm not teaching at the moment because it's summertime, and catching up on you know, a lot of reading, of course, among other things. And I'm actually sitting in the ruins of my basement because I'm now that I'm sans store, I've decided I'm going to finally set up my own cave, my own proper office. And put up all my original artwork, and I went to IKEA with Ryan and bought a desk and a swivel chair and a filing unit, and you know we're gonna get some things moving here. So
you know, all the times I've been to your house, I've never once been in your basement.
See, once again, that's a phrase that can lead to so many perilous directions. But my friend, next time you're here, I'll be happy to escort you down into the basement.
Okay.
And you can behold all the wonders that will be found therein.
You're not going to make me put the lotion in the basket, are you?
You get the hose again.
Oh, I love this guy. I missed you. All righty. So what do you guys want to talk about first? We can talk about like books we've been reading that we're jazzed about. We can talk about you know, multimedia stuff. Always things going on. Stuff going on in the news. What strikes people's fancy to kick us off here?
Well, is everybody going to see Ant-Man this weekend?
Hell yeah. Absolutely.
So I'm pretty stoked. One of our very best friends, she is an entomologist by profession, and she actually, through another entomologist friend that she works with, she got to help out one of the special effects studios that was working on the film because she specializes in ants. That's what she does all day long for like at least 5 years now. She works with ants. And so they contacted her because they had questions about how ants behaved, what they look like. So she sent them some research and did some things and had conversations. And so she was, you know, ever so remotely, you know, involved in the creation of the film. So it's pretty cool. She's very excited. And so we're all going to go see it together. So she can see if anything she told them actually made it into the film.
And I assume her name will be in the credits, correct, my friend?
I don't know. I don't know if it would extend that far. It's such a, you know, it was like a few email conversations with one of the special effects artists. I don't know if she got paid to do it, I think. So I don't know if I don't know how it works.
That'll be exciting, though, to go to the movie with someone who had a hand in its creation, though.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
I mean, it's a tiny role compared to all the other people and all the things they did, but she was delighted, and it is pretty cool, you know.
What do we all think of the trailers we've seen for the film? Because there's been a couple.
I have not watched a single trailer.
Oh, okay. Would you rather not spoil anything?
Yeah, man, no spoil. You know, who the hell are you talking to?
I didn't think your fanaticism went as far as pants when it came to this.
Yeah, I mean, when it's like a Marvel movie, I don't – zero trailers, right? What the hell? I'm going to go see it anyway, right? So – and then anything else, I want like the thinnest, most mild trailer. I basically want teasers that tells you zero about the plot and just – basically, I don't even need to see trailers anymore. Just tell me who the director is and who the main actors are, and I'll decide whether I'm going to see it or not. You know, come on.
My friend, fair enough. All I will say is it looks damn fun. And I my guess is we're not going to be disappointed.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Murdy,
the SFX size 3D. Yeah, I'm sorry. There's a little bit of a lag here for our Skype connection. I've seen one or two of the trailers, Chris, and the size changing gimmick special effects seem to be top notch. You know, consistent with the first film in the series. I like the looks of the villain that's going to be around. You know, the chemistry between Ant-Man and the Wasp seems like it's going to be taken to the next level. It's going to be more fun than the first one, which I must admit isn't really saying that much because I didn't like the first one that much. But I'm definitely going to be – I will go to see it when it comes out at the end of next week, I think. Or is it this week?
This week, this Friday.
It comes out this week, yeah.
This week? All right.
And listeners can look forward to us reviewing it, of course, in the not-too-distant future. All right. I just wanted to comment, since we're on the topic of multimedia. I know none of you guys have seen it. I just want to say that the second season of Luke Cage, which I'm almost done with, I've watched I watched 11 episodes out of the 13. I've loved all the Marvel series to varying degrees. This one has really struck me. Right to the core. I think the acting is really top flight in this particular season. Daniel made a good point to me in an email that even the villains, you feel sympathy, if not empathy, for all the characters in this season. The writing and the acting for second season of Luke Cage, it's just on another level. And I think it so perfectly captured the blaxploitation roots of the character, including the score, but the drama, the pathos, and how the dynamics going on between the characters affect their relationships, both not only within the more heroic characters, but also between the quote heroes and quote villains. And I can't emphasize enough how superb this particular Marvel season of one of their properties is. And I recommend everybody watch it as soon as they possibly can, because they're just knocking it out of the park with these street characters. I even enjoy the Danny Rand appearance. So, and I think when you watch it, they kind of make, maybe I'm misreading too much, but they kind of make a subtle reference to how his take on the character has been perceived. So it's very interesting, but definitely check out Luke Cage season 2 when you can. So,
yeah, we'll probably start it this week.
Yeah, you'll devour it very quickly, brother. I have no doubt. Anything else in multimedia people wanted to address regarding comics?
Well, there was the world premiere of the new Marvel series on the Freeform network, Cloak and Dagger.
Ah, yes, I watched the first one.
What the hell is Freeform?
It used to be ABC Family. They rebranded themselves about 2.5 years ago.
All right, that makes a lot more sense, because I heard about this, and I'm like, what freaking channel is Marvel selling out to now? But if it's ABC, then that makes sense. All right.
Yeah, part of the Disney empire.
Yeah.
How many episodes have you watched, Murd?
I believe I've seen exactly as many as you, Chris. I saw the big two-hour series premiere a few Thursday nights ago. And then the very next week, I think when the third episode was supposed to be on, was when Pants and I went down to Charlotte for Heroes Con. And the hotel down there did not have Freeform as part of its cable package. So, but honestly, from what I've done a little bit of homework into what the next couple of episodes have been about, and it just seems like the plot is creeping forward so slowly. I don't feel like I'm really missing much. I liked the setup well enough. I'm glad that I devoted those 2 hours to watching the first two episodes of the premiere. I like the way they've constructed the characters. You know, they've made a few changes from the way they were presented in the original comics of the early 80s, you know, which originated so strong, were rooted so strongly in the war on drugs that was part of the era.
Yes.
So they've updated it in that respect. The characters are a bit more grounded. They've kind of cut out the teen runaway angle. And well, the drug abuse angle is still present in some in at least one or two respects. But their origin has been changed in a way that to me is somewhat puzzling. It's just funny to me. Ever since like 2003, when the Ang Lee Hulk movie came out, and they changed the Hulk's origin there from like this big violent explosion of a weapon of war, a product of the military-industrial complex, to this weird little laboratory experiment. That set very poorly with me. And now, in recent years, a couple of comic book characters who've been adapted to the screen, whose origins are supposed to be weird little laboratory accidents, have instead been ramped up into big violent explosions. Like of The Flash, for example, it's supposed to be just Barry Allen standing in front of a shelf of chemicals when it's struck by lightning. And instead we get this giant dark matter reactor explosion that not only creates The Flash, but also gives lots of crazy superpowers to lots of crazy people. And exploring the fallout, literally and figuratively, of that becomes like a major focus of the series. And they seem to be doing the same thing now with Cloak and Dagger. Instead of the main characters getting their powers from being captured by criminals and being used as guinea pigs for radical new street drugs, there was a mysterious explosion that happened to them in their childhood that forever bonded their destinies together and gave them these strange dark and light superpowers. And it seems like the severely decompressed, it must be said, first season is going to be about the two of them going about their daily teenaged lives and also at the same time trying to figure out their connection to one another and the nature of their powers. And I think I may want to jump back in closer to the end of the season, but so far it's dragging a little bit, which in fairness to the showrunners is kind of a chronic problem of a lot of superhero serial melodramas that are on television these days. It's just they don't seem to have enough story to quite fill 13 or so episodes of an hour's length to pad out a season, so they just have to keep, you know, dragging their feet and slowing things down, and it's getting a little bit frustrating.
Murd, you won't find that problem with Luke Cage season 2, let me tell you.
Happy to hear it.
What'd you think of the performances of the two leads?
I thought they were extremely well cast. Tyrone Cloak in particular. I just love that. He just looks like this big, gawky outsider. I love the low tone, almost mumbling tone to his voice at times. You know, he projects like a withdrawn, like sullen teenager who's struggling to understand himself even before he learns he has the ability to access the Dark Force dimension. And Tandy is also well cast. Just a young, ebullient but world weary all at the same time as a result of her past life difficulties, the death of her father, the descent of her mother into the aforementioned drug abuse. Yeah, that's I have no problem at all with the two teenage leads. It's just I kind of wish that the series were written in a different way.
Yeah, I share your sentiments. I really enjoyed the leads immensely, and I echo what you said. I thought they both perfectly captured the essence of the characters. It was great to see Bill Mantlo's name once again on the screen, being given, you know, credit for one of his co-creations.
Along with Ed Hannigan?
That's correct. And like you said, Cloak and Dagger comes out of the grim and gritty 80s, so if I remember correctly, I think in the original comic they were being used as an experiment to make it like a super version of heroin or something like that. And of course that, you know, went in an unseen direction and they were given their powers. So I understand why they would obviously change that in this new television version. But like you, this is a show that, again, I have so little time, even over the summer, to watch all this TV, and I've dedicated myself to watching just a couple of shows. Like, for example, I'm finally going to sit down and start watching Game of Thrones this summer, which everybody tells me is a show that was made for me.
You've never watched it or read the book?
There we go. Nope. So... This summer, you are the gazillionth dear friend who has admonished me lovingly for that. So this summer will be the zero hour. I'm sitting down. My brother-in-law last couple years ago gave me the whole series on DVD. So it's time. But not to get too much of a tangent, but Cloak and Dagger, Murda, I'm going to probably go back to it eventually too. Especially because I really like the casting. I think the two characters, you felt the chemistry. I like how they established that that bit of an origin when they're little kids and how there's that connection there and how they may revisit that. So I think the show has possibilities. So it wasn't fluff. I mean, there were elements where you kind of felt like you're watching a WB show with some of the music. And I understand they're trying to go for a younger audience to some degree, and I get that.
Right. But yeah, they had to contrive occasions for the characters, especially Tandy, to dress up in pretty clothes and go amongst the beautiful people, like when they crashed that wedding. But yeah, it's definitely courting the same demographic as the CW. You are absolutely right there, Chris.
Yeah, but that's I mean that to be necessarily dismissive, because I thought there was enough there of the essence of what makes Cloak and Dagger a compelling concept that I think the show, could have legs. So. And Murd, before we forget, because you just mentioned kind of a segue, so you went to Heroes Con with Pants. Why don't you give a little field report on what that show was like this year?
Happy to oblige, Chris. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, this isn't going to be too laden with detail, because Heroes Con is now about a half a month ago, and some of those details have faded from memory. But, yes, Brian Christman and I did make our annual pilgrimage of the pants down to Heroes Con. Had to skip last year because I was involved in a stage production of Little Shop of Horrors, and there was a schedule conflict.
Which was tremendous, that was by not the way, a problem, ladies and gentlemen.
Oh, thank you, Chris. It was a great deal of fun for me, too. So we went down there. We started driving on Thursday evening, got down there good and early, got our passes because that is the pants way. And then the next morning, Friday, the con started up. I spent most of my time digging through back issue bins. I know I was just a shameless slave of avarice, but it's one of the best shopping cons in the country, so I wasn't about to miss out on any of the bargains. I actually found a few $5 for $1 bins, which is a rarity these days. Just a couple of the best things I found. I did dig up, not for ultra cheap, it was actually fairly pricey, but a copy of Adventure Comics number 463. This is back from the DC dollar comic days when there were several different rotating co-features, Aquaman, Wonder Woman, and the Justice Society. And Adventure Comics number 463 was the wrap-up to the Death of the Earth 2 Batman story. So I finally got to learn the details behind the death of Earth 2's Caped Crusader.
Outstanding.
I found a copy of Captain Action number 1 from DC in 1968, written by Jim Shooter. The cover was almost entirely off of it, but it was only a dollar, and it's something of a historical curiosity, and as a licensed book, it's not likely to be reprinted, so something I thought I had to jump on. And the biggest thing of the weekend as far as personal comics buying, and I have to give thanks to Pants for digging this up for me, a copy of the early 70s Invaders series, brought to us by Roy Thomas and Frank Robbins.
Oh, tremendous.
Yep, he found it for a mere $15, and that completes my run of that title. So now I can begin to devour Roy Thomas's first ongoing experiment with the revival of Golden Age comics characters in the in what was then the Modern Age, now the Bronze Age.
Murray, you've never read Invaders before?
One or two odd issues, but now I've got the complete run, so I can read it beginning to end.
I look forward to your report, my friend.
Mm-hmm. And I'll be happy to grant you that report.
Go ahead, Murray. I'm sorry.
I need to go home and get my copy of Giant-Sized Invaders number 1 and start there.
And what was your general sense of the con? Do you think it was well attended? I know you've always spoken very highly of it. I haven't been to that con in about 20 years. So.
I think it may be it may be somewhat past its peak attendance. Still quite busy. It's still thriving, but it didn't seem quite as vibrant nor as crowded as it has other years. Maybe it's just because Brian and I become a bit jaded about this, and we decided not to show up and wait in line with everybody to get in. We were perfectly content just staying in the hotel and chilling for an extra half hour after the doors open so that we could just stroll in at our leisure. So, yeah, we didn't get the full con experience that way, I suppose. But, yeah, I did spend a lot of time just cruising through back issue bins. Pants did not buy a single comic while he was there, if you don't count the issue of Invaders that he scouted out for me. But he did buy a few pages of original art. The full nature of which I won't deny him the pleasure of telling everybody about those. But there was one detailing the origin of the Rainbow Raider, that classic Copper Age Flash villain, from Dan Jurgens issue of Booster Gold. I was kind of envious of that grab for him, this never-ending hunt for original art. There were a few panels to be attended. I went to one featuring our old friend Kevin Mellon, comic artist Kevin Mellon, who's been working on the Archer animated series for the past 4 or 5 years. He was originally a character designer. Now he's, I think, been promoted to storyboard supervisor. So that was probably the best attended panel I went to all weekend. It was moderated by a member of the 11 O'Clock Comics podcast crew, one of those that I don't know personally, but the others, Jason Wood and Vince B and so on. Some of our old CGS colleagues who have gotten their own podcast now were also in attendance right there in the front row. Pants and I both went to a panel put on by our friends at Tomorrow's Publishing on Saturday afternoon at the con. Yep, and Roy Thomas, Roy the Boy himself, was sitting on that one, as was our friend Eric Nolan Webbington and Michael Urie, who wrote a book that was the backbone of my pleasure reading for most of that weekend and continues to be now. It's like most Tomorrow's books. It's fairly thick and dense. Comics A-Go-Go, superheroes of what Urie calls the camp age, which is basically 1965 through 68, during the camp explosion that was sort of building up to and then ignited by the Batman Adam West TV show. So it's all kinds of kooky, crazy concepts from TV and comic books featuring superheroes, all kinds of campy superheroes, silly superheroes, spoof superheroes, Saturday morning cartoon superheroes, anything having to do with superheroes that didn't take itself entirely seriously from the mid-60s is covered by this book. And Michael Urie was up there on that panel, talking not about that, but about whichever one of Tomorrow's publications he's the editor of these days.
He's the editor, the editor of the Back Issue magazine.
Ah, all right. And Roy Thomas was there to throw in a few anecdotes of his own and about future goings-on in the Alter Ego magazine. So, yeah, that was exciting. It was just nice to be able to hear Roy talk. I still am jealous of Pants's ability to listen to that panel he sat on, I think it was last year, with Roy Thomas and Jerry Ordway, just batting the ideas back and forth about All-Star Squadron and so forth. But I learned that an upcoming issue of one of Tomorrow's magazines is going to have the transcript of that panel in it. So I need feel left out no longer.
Indeed. And we should mention that. Brian, you interviewed Roy Thomas the Peter some years ago, didn't you? On the show?
I think so, yeah. I mean, we definitely – yeah, we did.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I know we did. I was in studio for that myself.
I'm sure you probably asked most of the questions, Merv.
Well, you know how I get when there's a creator on the line. I just kind of clammed up.
If I remember correctly, my friend, I think you were interviewing him about Silver Age Captain America. I think he was on the show twice, actually. I'd have to look that up. But
yeah, I think that sounds right.
Yeah, great interviews, though. Merv, outstanding field report. Anything you want to add to that, brother?
Oh, sure. There was also a panel between Evan Dockshainer and Jerry Ordway talking about Superman and Captain Marvel, the original Captain Marvel, which was not quite as upbeat as I thought or hoped it would be. Mr. Ordway did most of the talking. Evan Shainer, being like the newbie in the room, was a little shy and reserved, as I certainly would be in his position, too. But still, a couple of interesting thoughts from Mr. Ordway about his time as the one of the primary Superman writers, and also his Power of Shazam series of the 90s, which will be covered in a distantly upcoming shut spotlight on Shazam in the Chromium Age episode that we will record much later. Let's see. Oh, and Pants and I also attended the Inkwell Awards, which is annually held at the Heroes Con to honor those remaining practitioners of the comic book inking profession. which is something we always like to do when we go down there. It's always a good time. Plus, they give out free door prizes at the end. I didn't prepare an official shout-out list. We weren't really keeping track of this, but I did want to mention all those folks that we got to see and say hello to along the way. And so if I leave your name out and you're listening at home, please don't think that I'm snubbing you intentionally. This is all off the top of the head, off the cuff. Well, Eric Nolan Wethington, of course. Pans and I made several visits to the Tomorrow's Table to visit with him, and we went to his panel, as I mentioned. The 11 o'clock comics guys were there. Stuart McWilliam was there. TV's Mario was there. I haven't seen him in a while. Alan White, who used to be New Mutant on our forums, I saw him. John Carroll. My fellow Shazam fan, Josh, who was also at that Jerry Ordway and Doc Shaner panel, and whom I may see at Baltimore if I decide to go. A couple of different guys named Chris, including Chris Doherty, who provided me with a piece of original art. He was also at that Ordway panel. Eric and his friend Caleb. Eric is the owner of the Cowabunga Comic Shop in someplace in Wisconsin. I think it was Oconomowoc. But he does a podcast called The Cowcast, which kind of provides a retailer's perspective, Chris, about the comics industry.
Check that out.
Yep, and he's a very nice guy. And he and his friend Caleb, who's originally from Wisconsin but is a transplant to North Carolina, went to dinner with Pants and myself one night at the con. So we got to know those guys and got to hear them critique the fried cheese curds that the bar restaurant we were eating in was serving. Didn't quite live up to Wisconsin standards, but came close. I got to meet Rod Hedrick. He accompanied Pants and me to a Brazilian steakhouse where we nearly ate ourselves into infirmity on Saturday night of the con. We actually stayed home. We stayed home from the art auction, you know, the big original art auction to raise funds to continue to perpetuate Heroes Con. They do that every Saturday night at the con. It's in one of the ballrooms at the hotel, and it's always a big deal. And we couldn't roll ourselves out of our hotel room to get down to that thing. That tells you how much meat we consumed at that steakhouse, but boy, it was good, as Pants will tell you in person next time you see him. So Rod was along with us for that. Mike Bates, MBATS on the forum with his Bride of Frankenstein t-shirt. I got to see him real briefly. It's always nice to see him. Around the creator tables, I saw Dave Wachter. I went to say hello to Sean Pryor, who's got a Kickstarter campaign going on right now. A book that was created by a former CGS listener, Keith Cunningham, and our friend Chris Murin is editing it. Lifted of Gods and Thieves is what that's called. It's kind of like a Lara Croft story, except she's gotten her hands on an artifact that's got an entire pantheon of gods after her. So I've already supported that Kickstarter and thought I'd mention that on the air while I've got the floor. I saw David Peterson and Jeremy Bastion. Always good to see them. I went and had a nice talk with colorist and Doctor Who fan Supreme Charlie Kirkoff. I saw Buzz briefly. He was there and doing his Buzz thing. He had two tables to himself. I know I'm going to think. Oh, and there was a gentleman named Steve who was. I didn't get a chance to learn his name. I was dashing past the table where he was. That he was manning in a hurry to get someplace. And he was running some kind of, it looked like it was almost a politically oriented awareness initiative booth that had decided to table at HeroesCon for some reason. And he said he listened to the show, and I said, well, thank you for listening, and basically dashed away before he had a chance to say anything else. So, Steve, if you're listening, it's nice to meet you, and please accept my apologies. And again, I'm sorry. I'm sure there are a couple of other people that I'm leaving out here, but we did do some socializing because that's what HeroesCon is about. Oh, and on the trip down, this is something that Pants conspired to make happen with our listener, Big John Morrissey, known as the Marvel Man on the forums. He lives in Virginia, and so we stopped off for lunch on the way down to the con at a McDonald's restaurant near where he lives, and he came by. He brought his mother along, and the four of us, Pants and me and John and his mother, sat there and had a nice lunch, and when it was all done, John presented me with a belated Christmas present. Consisting of, Chris, do you remember that deluxe Infinity slipcase edition that Marvel put out a little while ago?
Yes.
It was that.
Ah.
Yep. So I owe John quite a few thanks. I was really a little bit taken aback by it. He's promised that his gifts to us will be much more modest this coming Christmas. But yep, I was able to take that delightful bit of cosmic goodness home with me from Heroes Con, thanks to John. So thank you very much, John.
Murd, I have two points to make. First, it just shows how loved you are, of course. And number two, you mean your head may not be the size of the leaders, but it has the same prodigious power for you to recall all those people from memory. Once again, I'm in awe, sir.
Hmm. Oh, and that reminds me. We also met a guy named Jeremy and his two young daughters, and we made a drunk cap joke on parting. You know, keep them flying, Jeremy. Yeah, it's not the first time we've met Jeremy, but he's one of the Heroes Con regulars. I may just continue to rhino out other people that we met at the con as the episode wears on here. But for the time being, that is the end of my field report. So thank you for listening. It was a good time had by all.
Feel free to rhino on as needed. Brother Deemer, I know your time is more limited. Why don't we talk about some of the books you've been reading lately that you're jazzed about?
Well, I have been going to the shop each week because I missed pre-ordering it on DCBS, and I've been getting Man of Steel. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's the first DC book I've read in a long time, but I got it because it's Bendis, right? And I'm enjoying it a lot. I've read three of the five so far, it's a lot of fun. I just love Bendis, man. The guy writes – it's as if he writes for an audience of one, me. Like, he just knows what I want to read and see, and he writes exactly that, and so it's great. So I'm very excited about that. I've pre-ordered now Action Comics and Superman, so when this is over, you know, I'll start getting those. And I'm intrigued because I've seen some of the ads and seen in previews some of the other new, you know, relaunches or whatever that's coming out, or, you know, just new creative teams or whatever. I'm intrigued by Justice League, Scott Snyder and Jim Chung. Like, that's hard to resist, right? Sure, I haven't read a Justice League comic in a long time, but I don't know. I might have to bite the bullet on that one just because that creative team sounds amazing. And I think I've seen one or two others that I'm forgetting off the top of my head, but it's kind of fun to... You know, I've gone through phases, right, where I never read any DC comics, and then I started reading a bunch in the early 2000s, right, when DC was, like, at the top of their game, I think, with all the Geoff Johns stuff and everything, and it was really, really great. And then they did the whole Final Crisis and just screwed everything with 52, and everything changed, and I didn't really read much after that. And now it feels like they're maybe in a position where they're finally catching on to Marvel's tricks, which is hire really talented people and put them on the same book instead of having like a really good writer over here with a nobody artist or a really good artist over here with a shitty writer. You know, they're finally like, let's build amazing creative teams, right? And let's make books that people want to buy. And so they're sucking me back in, right? And again, I haven't read Justice League, so I don't know if it's going to be any good or not, right? But I hope that it is, and I'll probably read an issue or two and see what I think. So that's just sort of gotten me jazzed up a little bit because I can like DC. I like a lot of the characters. I just haven't been into the general stories that they've been telling for a while. So I'm kind of excited to see if it will, you know, continue. Yeah.
Now, I have Man of Steel 1. I haven't read it yet. So when we talk about Bendis' sensibility as a writer, when we think about all the work he's done for Marvel, how does that come across in Superman? Is he taking it in a very different direction, or is the sense of dialogue the same? How would you qualify it?
I would say that the sense of dialogue is close, right? I think he toned it down a little bit because I don't know that it would make a lot of sense for Superman. I'm sure if he was writing a Batman comic, it would be all over the place, right? Like that, because crime comics are like his wheelhouse.
Yeah.
So he turned it back a notch, but he has some humor in it, which is good because he knows how Superman can behave and how people can behave around Superman and how Clark Kent talks and, you know, all that stuff. So he's hitting that perfectly. And he's just, I don't know, there's just something about Bendis. I don't know that I can explain it exactly. I'd have to really think about what words to choose, and I'm coming up at a loss right now. But there's something about him. I get, you know, probably a lot of people, I know there are a lot of people who aren't Bendis fans, and they probably won't want to read his Superman comics, and that's fine, right? but I think, yeah, but if you like him, I think you're going to love the Superman comics, and I think it's exciting, right? And especially Superman, right? Because Superman is one of those guys, much like Captain America, where I think about 99% of the comics he's in are crap. And because the Boy Scout thing is just boring. And so you have to do something a little different. You have to approach it from an interesting angle, or there has to be a really killer plot line or something, right? And it's a little too soon, I think, to say if he's doing that, right? I can't leap all that praise on him. But my hope is that he does what few people have done, and he can be successful in shining a new light on it, right? So we'll see. And I have no idea what's happened with Superman for the last 5 or 6 years, right? So this might not be fresh and interesting at all, right? I don't really know. I'm just sort of getting caught up by letting him tell the story and sort of bring me up to speed. So all I can say is that I've liked the issue so far, and I'm hopeful that he can make Superman awesome. Right?
Well, considering I know how you often are dismissive of the Superman concept because of that Boy Scout aspect, that's high praise from you, my friend.
Well, like I said, I mean, we'll wait until, like, you know, issue 6 or 10 comes out, and, you know, of Superman or action, right? And we'll see if he managed to make it work.
Fair enough. I wanted to mention, because you mentioned Justice League, I have them in my nights, and I haven't read them yet, but Shane read them, the No Justice miniseries by Scott Snyder, which I think is a precursor to the series you mentioned. Shane praised it highly, and as you know, he's, you know, one of the world's top Justice League fans, so...
Yeah.
That may be a miniseries worth checking. I also want to mention to you, my friend, if you haven't read Mr. Miracle by Tom King.
Oh, yeah, you told me to do that before. I have to check that out.
Yeah, so forget about – you don't need a lot of knowledge of what's going on in the DC universe. Just you know the basics of the New Gods, and you're good.
Sure, yeah.
And I think you're going to eat that up.
Well, yeah, I got turned on by all those characters in those – in the early 2000s or late, you know, I guess I got caught up when the JSA comics, right?
Yep.
That run, the Geoff Johns run, it's so amazing, right? And that series introduced me to a lot of the New Gods and Mr. Miracle and all those guys. So I definitely have a soft spot for those characters, and so hearing that somebody's treating them right is exciting.
And I believe it's a finite series, which is refreshing. So I think it's going to end in the not too distant future. So you can maybe just even wait for a trader to get the whole thing in one shot.
Yeah, that's probably what I'll do. So,
God, I miss the sonorous tones of Deemer. Fantastic.
I wish I had more comics to report to you. Right, I have a stack. I mean, I really, my pull list is very small at this point, and I'm trying to keep it that way because. You know, I only have so much free time, and I don't want to spend a ton of money, but I do want to, you know, keep my toe in the pool, right? So I'm trying to read things that sound interesting. I read the new Avengers number one.
By Jason Aaron, yeah.
Yeah, and I have issue 2 waiting for me to read. So I'm looking forward to, I'll probably try to read that tomorrow. And the first issue was good. I liked it. You know, again, it's too early to say, oh, it wasn't like, oh my God, it was the most amazing comic I've ever read. It was a solid comic, and I'll read issue 2 and see what happens, you know.
Yeah, I read issues 1 and 2, and like you, I mean, I've been loving Aaron's work ever since he did the classic Vietnam War story, The Other Side, several years ago when I was first introduced to him, and then, of course, his work on Scalped. But I think he has the tone of the Avengers right. He has the voices of the characters. So I'm looking forward to where he goes with the series. And I believe I sympathize, my friend, because between money and time, I mean, I'm reading more books than you are, but still, I cut back a lot of stuff. So I'm just trying to follow my favorite writers and see where they take me.
So. Yeah, I'm trying. You know, I've been just reading a lot of books lately, and for the last several years, and not nearly as many comics. And every time I read a comic, I'm like, oh, I could be reading a book, you know. And then sometimes I look at my to read pile at my nightstand, and I'm like, oh, I should take 20 minutes and read 2 comics. You know, like, this is a problem. Like,
yeah, but my friend, I just do both. Just balance them.
I know. Well, I do. I try to. I generally read comics on the weekend, and then I read novels and stuff during the week.
Let me tell you, here's one tip, and this is typical of me, so I know you won't be too revolted. some of the audience might be, but when you feel that especially mystical bowel movement coming on, perfect time to read a comic.
No, I'll tell you, I'm reading Jamie Hatton's book on the Kindle app on my phone when I'm in the toilet. So, you know, there you go.
And he would be honored by that, my friend. He would.
I'm sure that he would. Yeah. Did you read his book yet?
I have not read it. I plan to read it this summer. Just in general, how is it so far? I've heard it's a lot of fun.
I'm enjoying the heck out of it. Yeah, I mean it's a superhero tale told by a guy who knows shit about superheroes, right? So he's got it right. There was one moment where he started down this path, and I'm like, Jamie, that is so, you can't do that, so cliche. And then he flipped it on his head, and I was like, oh, all right, well that's cool. You know, like I was about to message him, you know, text him and be like, what the hell are you doing at 33% or whatever percent it was in the book? I'm like, that's ridiculous. And then I read two more pages. I'm like, oh, okay. I should have known better.
Yeah, you know? he's way too sharp to fall into that kind of trap. Let people know. So if they go on Amazon, should they just put in his name or the title of the book? What's the easiest way to find it?
I think if you search for James Hatton, you'll have an easier time than you search, because the title is Trio, which is – you know, a pretty common title.
Yeah.
So if you search for James Hatton, so if anyone doesn't know, Jamie Hatton is a longtime friend of the show. I mean, and Chris, you've been friends with him for God only knows how long, right?
Yes,
now.
Yes.
Years. And yeah, so and he used to do a web comic. What was the name of that? The dot. So with the
in his likeness.
In his likeness, right. Yeah. So for years he did that, and we saw him at tons of cons, and he used to date Danielle, and it was a whole, you know, he's like, the circle is very tight.
Yes.
And he's a really good guy, and he finished a novel, right? I know that that's not completely unique, but it's pretty rare. Like a lot of people talk about writing a book and they try to write a book but he actually wrote the book, edited the book, and released the book, and it's $5 on Amazon, and it's about superheroes. And it's called Trio, and I think it's a hell of an accomplishment, right? I've never written a book, you know? I have some ideas, but I've never put it down to paper, so I admire the hell out of him for actually completing it and for actually entertaining me along the way, right? I'm 50% through, and I think it's great. So, you know, if you like – and it's a quick read. It's, you know, it's not a super long book, so if you're a heavy reader, you'll plow through it in no time. And, you know, give the guy a couple bucks and buy the book. It's the only Kindle. There's no paperback or anything because it's just self-published. But check it out.
Well, he'll appreciate that testimonial. And because I, you know, I, like you said, I've known Jamie for at least 15 years. And he's ever since I knew him, he's always been writing, always, in one form or another. So it's thrilling, but albeit not surprising to see that he's you know, he's realized a full book. So that's wonderful.
So. Yeah, I mean, I hope he keeps writing, because based on this book, I'll happily buy his next book whenever and whatever that is.
We'll talk to him and find out.
Yeah.
Anything else? I know you have to go soon, brother. Anything else you wanted to talk about? Any other topics? Or
I'm trying to think. My head is swimming with stuff because I paint these Warhammer miniatures, and they just released the new version of the rules for Age of Sigmar, which is the fantasy Warhammer game. And with it, they released a whole bunch of new miniatures, and there are some absolutely incredible looking miniatures that I'm trying so hard not to buy, but I'm going to have to cave and get some of them. Because my backlog of painting is tremendous, but these are too cool to resist. So anybody out there, I know that there's actually quite a few listeners who dabble in Warhammer and other miniature games, and I know they all have the same problem. Just like we all have too many comics to read, all of us miniature painters all have way too many minis to paint, and but like idiots, we just keep buying new ones, even though we'll never paint all the ones we have in our backlog already. But you know, that's just how it goes. So I'm going to continue that proud tradition and buy new miniatures this weekend of, you know, some new awesome death related. They're called the Night Haunts. They're like these cool, like ghostly skeleton things, and they're just incredible. So,
well, as always, whenever you espouse your passions, my friend, it's always fun to listen to. So, and I'm actually meant to ask you, do you play Warhammer, or you just enjoy painting the miniatures?
So I've played a few times. In fact, Clara and I just played a game just this weekend on Sunday, and she beat me. You know, she's 11. So there, I wouldn't hire me as a general if we ever get into any sort of, you know, civil war situation. I should not have that job. So, when the aliens invade, somebody else can head the troops because it's not me. Also, I rolled really shitty dice rolls, so that's part of it. So I do play once in a while. Mostly I just paint. And that's where I get the satisfaction out of, is accomplishing and just upping my skill level every time I have to. I watch videos, I try new techniques, I just gotta get better and better and better, right? That's the only thing that keeps me interested, is if I feel like I'm the same as I was last week, then it's no fun anymore, right? So I gotta keep challenging myself.
And knowing your discipline for the challenge, I have no doubt you'll continue to excel there, my friend. And by the way, if that civil war ever occurs, it's obvious you should be the quartermaster in charge of logistics.
Well, yeah, that's very true. Yeah. By the way, speaking of quartermastering, Chris, have you read the books by Rick Atkinson about World War II?
Oh, I have them all. They're phenomenal.
So I've only read the first two so far, but I mean, we should not have won the war, right? I mean, our logistics were terrible.
I'm looking at my library right now. You haven't read The Guns at Last Light yet, which is the final.
Right.
Installment in that trilogy. So you were struck by just the logistical...
The complete incompetence, like shipping stuff to the wrong place and loading the boats with the most important stuff at the bottom, and then, you know, and not just every mistake you could have possibly made. We only won that war by sheer luck and sheer numbers, right? We just kept throwing more shit. Well, if 30 boats go to the wrong place, that's all right. We'll just send 30 more. Like, it's fine. We have a whole lot of factories. We'll make more, you know?
Well, you hit the nail on the head to a degree in that the sheer economic scope and power of the United States, combined with the immense manpower of the Soviet Union, made it almost impossible, short of having the atomic bomb, for the Axis to win the Second World War.
Well, I mean, so, you know, in the North African campaign, right, there were times when, like, a couple more days or two more mistakes and we would have been pushed back, right? Like, it was like real nail biter there.
Perhaps temporarily, but again, not to get too much of a tangent, but Germany didn't have the air or naval power necessary in the Mediterranean to maintain their forces there to achieve anything like a significant decisive victory. So that reminds me, you know, I am, just to give people a little bit of a tease, because we're in my wheelhouse right now. I am in the early planning stages of my own history podcast, ladies and gentlemen.
Nice.
So, don't expect to see that till at least the end of the year. I'm going to spend this summer planning it out. But, Mr. Deem, I'll be turning to you for some technical advice when the time comes.
Oh, please do. Please do. I'll be happy to help.
Honored, brother. And I'll also be calling you, sir, soon to arrange our dinner at your abode, which we've talked about in the past.
Yeah, we have a table for Keiko, you know? No, I'm serious. I built her a table for the smashing of the clay. What is that called again? I can't remember.
I don't know. I don't know either, but she's very excited about it.
Yeah, whatever. So. Yeah. You have to knead your clay a bunch before you can use it, right? And there's a special table. It's supposed to be a certain height. And so I had to build one for Tasha, and Keiko was lamenting that she didn't have one. It didn't take very long, and so I just made one for Keiko too. So.
Well, we're honored, and we'll be in touch to set that up, my friend. Thank you.
Cool. All right, gentlemen. Yeah, I got to go. I know that there was more I wanted to talk about, but I've completely forgotten because, you know, life gets in the way. So
next time, brother. Next time.
Yeah. Cool. All right, and have a great chat, gentlemen.
All right, brother. Have a good night. Take care.
All right.
Thanks again, Brian.
Yep, sure thing. Bye-bye.
Ciao.
Bye.
All right, Murd. Want to talk a little tomorrows, my friend?
Oh, yes, why not? Yes, okay. We are giving them quite a platform here in this episode already, but we happen to have exciting news here. We're such big fans of Tomorrow's around here, and they're celebrating their 25th anniversary this year, which is one of the reasons why they had that big panel going on.
Yes.
The news is they're adding a new magazine to their already well-established battery of fantastically informative and entertaining magazines full of fan formation for fans young and old. It's called Retro Fan, and it delves into, it does for other non-specific the print or comic book forms of popular culture of yesteryear, what Alter Ego and Back Issue do for comics of those decades. So it seems to be, it focuses primarily on like the 60s and 70s, but it can proceed as far forward in time as, say, the 90s as well. And the first issue has already been made available to us. And Chris, let's hear what you've got to say about it.
Well, as always, I'm just floored by the quality of the production, the detail in terms of the research, and I'll talk about some of the topics in a moment. You know, the great writers, the columnists that get involved, like Martin Pascoe, Andy Mangels, Ernest Farino, Scott Shaw, of course, Michael Urey, who is the editor of this, as he's the editor of also the Magnificent Back issue. And like Murd said, if you grew up watching, you know, Saturday morning cartoons, you know, exposed to pop culture involving superheroes on television and movies and so forth and toys in the 1960s and 70s and the 80s too, this magazine is for you. I mean, this, for example, you know, as Murd mentioned, they were kind enough to give us advanced copies to look over and discuss. You've got a great interview with Lou Ferrigno, who was, I'm sure many listeners know, was the original television Incredible Hulk. They have a great article about, and I remember these, the Mego Elastic Hulk figure. There's also an Elastic Spider-Man figure. They have the ad on page 11, which I remember vividly from comics when I was a little kid. And again, I could talk all day about Mego. A lengthy article by Martin Pascoe on the Phantom and some of the trials and tribulations that characters faced in multimedia, like the Billy Zane film, for example, which, you know, Murd, I've never seen, I'm sorry to say.
I've never seen it either, actually. It's really more Matt's wheelhouse. He's definitely seen it multiple times. I think he's got a giant poster of it in his house someplace.
Yeah, and I think Shane, so you'll have to talk to him about that. My favorite article, though, on page 25, is an in-depth exploration of the classic Star Trek animated series from the 1970s, which I have on DVD, and I haven't watched all of that, and I'm ashamed to say yet. But they really go into detail on just the creation of the show, what went into it, the various creative people involved. Of course, as many listeners no doubt know, they actually got almost the entire original cast of the original television show, the live-action show, to return to perform the voices of their characters on this animated show.
Pretty much everybody but Walter Koenig.
That's correct. So you get full-on Shatner, right, as Kirk, in this show. And it's a lengthy article. It starts on, excuse me. And this is the kind of detail you expect from and just loving research you expect from Tomorrow. So it starts on page 25. Goes all the way to page 37, so it's a fantastic exploration of that classic animated series. So that was my favorite article I looked over. Article about I Met the Wolfman, Lon Chaney. I mean, there's great stuff in here. This is, once again, Tomorrow's never fails to just touch that sweet spot when it comes to fanboy nostalgia and pop culture. There's even something here about Andy Griffith's hometown. the town that was sort of the model for Mayberry, an interview with Betty Lynn, who played Thelma Lou. This is probably more in Pants' wheelhouse, the Andy Griffith Show, Andy Griffith Show collectibles. There's articles from Tom Stewart about his collecting habits. You know, they showcase different, not only different writers, but also different collectors and, you know, what their passions are and how they've gone about assembling their collections. And issue two, looking at to come, it's a quarterly magazine, by the way. So the fall issue will feature Elvira, among other things. I'm very excited about the winter issue, Richard Donner interview. Oh.
Ooh.
And Murd, spring.
That's a
big get. Yeah, spring 2019. Murdy Pooh, this is all for you. Issue four, Saturday morning Shazam.
Yeah, something I could stand to know a little more about. I think I've seen maybe one episode of that old Michael Gray and Jackson Bostwick production. When Nick at TV Land several years ago was doing what they called their kitchen, KITSCHEN, on Friday nights. I think I saw one or two episodes there, but I don't. Yeah, beyond that and whatever I've read about it, I don't really know that much. Anything classic Saturday morning is okay in my book, though. So if this thing by Andy Mangels, his retro Saturday mornings is going to be a regular feature. I'll be happy as a clam. Because, Chris, like you, I really enjoyed that animated Star Trek article that he wrote. And he was the perfect person to write it because he co-wrote Lou Scheimer, you know, one of the founders of the Filmation Animation Studio that produced that animated Star Trek. His autobiography, which also came out in Tomorrow's, Creating the Filmation Generation. So
yep.
Andy had all the insider information he could possibly need to write a great exploration and treatment of the history of that show. I also really enjoyed Marty Pascoe's column. He's one of my favorite writers of the Bronze Age, so his pesky perspective on various things will be welcome reading for me in the future, I'm sure.
And so in general, you obviously enjoyed the magazine as much as I did, my friend.
Oh, yes, yes. I was reading it on the drive back from Heroes Con and devoured it in a much shorter period of time than I thought it would take me to finish it. I was especially thrilled by the new Scott Shaw Oddball Comics column, because Scott Shaw, who is a co-creator of Captain Carrot and his amazing Zoo Crew, among other concepts, also worked in animation. He's got kind of this little... his Oddball Comics slideshow presentations have been a mainstay of the San Diego Comic-Con. He's also been known to give private demonstrations for bachelor parties and stuff. But now he's going to have a print column where he's doing basically what he does in his slideshow. He throws the historical spotlight on really bizarre, singular issues of various comic series. And in Retro Fan number one, he introduces us to the Gold Key Comics concept of Zodi the Mod Rob. A robot who comes to life and immediately becomes a horoscope-obsessed New Age hippie. Lasted all the way one issue, but what issue it was.
I also wanted to point out, if I may, my brother, I got my latest DCB service shipment a few days ago, and include the latest issue of Alter Ego, number 153, cover date July 2018. And this edition I was especially looking forward to because it's Roy Thomas's and his staff's tribute to Fabulous Flo Steinberg, who passed away just about a year ago. And I haven't had a chance to read through the whole magazine yet. I'm looking forward to it. But, you know, it starts with Roy giving a very touching editorial about his relationship to Flo because when he came to work for Marvel in 1965, you know, the bullpen was tiny and she was one of the people who was there as Stan Lee's, you know, she was called his Gal Friday, his secretary, as they would say then, they'd call her an administrative assistant. And then the magazine by Bill Shelley goes into an in-depth look at Flo's career, her life. They reprint an old interview with Flo from the 1980s. So if listeners aren't aware, Flo Steinberg was one of the linchpins in Marvel's early Silver Age success. She was there from the get-go. You know, she answered a lot of the fan mail. She dealt with fans trying to come into the office. She was one of the foundations, really, of the early Marvel bullpen and of the Marvel Age of Comics. And as the story goes, that old skinflint, Martin Goodman, wouldn't give her a modest raise in 1968, so she left. That was a sound business decision by the publisher there. But, you know, and she went on to have a career in independent comics, and she actually returned to Marvel later in life and worked for them again. So I'm really looking forward to reading this. I never met her at a show. I wish I had. But she was always renowned for her sense of humor, her generosity of spirit, and just her real enthusiasm for the work she was doing. So, if you love reading about Marvel history, especially from the Silver Age, you know, the 1960s, definitely pick up Alter Ego number 153. It's out now. As always, chock full of a lot of great photographs of the era. They also go into Flo's successor, Robin Green, and she wrote a Marvel promo essay in Rolling Stone in 1971. So that's a cool thing to check out as well. So this is especially great issue of Alter Ego, and I know, you know, from what I've read over the years that, you know, she was very important to Roy Thomas, and you can tell he really put his all into this particular tribute. So that's Alter Ego number 153. What else do you want to talk about, brother?
Rhino! Dean. Yeah, one new friend and one old friend I forgot to mention earlier that I saw at Heroes Con. Our friend Dean Stahl, who used to be Poozer78 on our forums. He and his wife, Midget, made the drive down from Michigan. It was his first time at Heroes Con. I don't think it was quite as kind to him sales-wise as he might have liked. He had along his is a wrestling fan comic, Headlocks and Heartaches, which he was selling to folks. And it's always cool to see Dean, but it's been a little while since I've seen him last, so I hope he had a good time at EuroCon, at least made enough to pay for the table. And across from him was a new friend. He produced a Christmas-related comic book called North Stars, which is about the adventures of one of Santa Claus's daughters. He's had many fictional daughters in various genres, but this particular daughter of Santa Claus teams up with a Yeti princess, and the two of them have holiday-themed adventures in Christmas land and beyond. They go up against the Krampus in the first issue. It's being distributed by Scholastic Books, apparently. The guy who creates it is named Jim Shelley. He co-creates it with his young daughter, Hagen. And we had a very nice long talk about various Christmas specials and about our current and former loves in comics. And he was Chris, I don't know if you're familiar with a Saturday Night Live skit that was it involved Tom Hanks. It aired a couple of Octobers ago, introducing a character called David Pumpkins. Does that ring a bell to you, Chris?
Unfortunately, no, my friend.
it's a good laugh. It was from October of 2016, just before the fateful presidential election. Everybody was looking for some good escapist humor, and this silly sketch involving Tom Hanks as the character David S. Pumpkins gave everybody a good laugh. I had never seen it or heard of it until I saw Jim standing there in this three-piece suit with made of a jack-o'-lantern print fabric. I didn't get the joke, but I watched the YouTube video of that sketch that night, and I've now seen the light. David Pumpkins is his own thing, and it's a funny thing.
He looked like
Tom Hanks as that character. Yeah, definitely watch the video. It's only a few minutes long. It's a well-structured bit of sketch comedy, and it's also a good Halloween laugh. So thank you to Jim for introducing me to that and for just hanging out at the con and offering this quality product to some new readers. Okay, so there's my Heroes Con Rhino. I hope I haven't left anybody else out. as far as what I might contribute to what I've been reading lately, Chris, I really haven't been reading much of anything recent, not too surprisingly. I'll add to Brian's earlier comments about Bendis's Man of Steel that I stayed away from it for pretty much exactly the same reasons that Brian decided to read it. Not that I don't think Bendis is capable deep down of writing a decent Superman. I just didn't feel like paying anything close to cover price to watch him possibly fail. He's not one of my favorite writers. Not necessarily a least favorite, but not one of my favorites. But I did learn at HeroesCon from that panel featuring Ordway and Doc Shaner that the latter, Doc Shaner, penciled one of the early issues of Bendis' Man of Steel, and he got a chance to design his own take on the post-Flashpoint Toy Man, classic Superman villain who's one of my favorite characters. So now I think I may have to seek out, which I think it might have been issue two of Man of Steel, but that each one is penciled by a different artist.
Yep.
I might have to seek that out because I like Shaner's artwork in general, and his take on Toy Man I think I'll have to experience firsthand.
All right.
Plus, it's an interesting premise. I mean, from what we learned in Action Comics number 1000, Superman is going up against a new villain who may or may not have been responsible for the destruction of Krypton. So Superman's getting like his own Joe Chill character.
Okay.
His own a criminal white whale to hunt. I don't know that Superman necessarily needs that in his life, but it's not even guaranteed that this villain really is going to be worthy of Superman's vengeance in the way that I've implied here. But it will be interesting to see Bendis putting Superman through that ringer, you know, putting him through that into that emotional headspace, the same headspace that his friend Batman has lived in his entire adult life. So yeah, it is Man of Steel is something that I will probably want to check out later on, but very cheaply, and it'll be another one of those guilty pleasure type purchases that we sometimes talk about on the show.
Brother, you're entitled to a guilty pleasure or two.
Thank you, Chris.
Go ahead, sir.
That I read just this afternoon that you might appreciate, Chris. Mm. It's a classic Bronze Age Marvel. I've been working my way through Doug Mensch and Herb Trimpe's Godzilla King of the Monsters from the late 70s.
Classic.
And just this very afternoon, shortly before we got together and went on the air with this recording. I read issue number 23. For pants, it's the penultimate issue of that series from 79. And it features Godzilla going up against the Fantastic Four, the Avengers, and J. Jonah Jameson. That's the matchup you never knew you wanted to see. But it's a pretty short fight, but Jonah's a scrapper. He does not back down from that giant lizard for a second.
Of course not.
And in again, to bring this around to the first thing we talked about in this episode, Hank Pym as Yellowjacket and Janet Van Dyne as the Wasp are actually instrumental in Godzilla's defeat by the end of the issue.
And what was fun about the Godzilla series, I loved it when I was a kid. I was hunting out the back issues. Is that, you know, they really took pains to integrate it into the Marvel Universe. I mean, Gabe Jones and Dum-Dum Dugan were regular supporting characters.
Mm-hmm.
I think they may have combined – did they combine Shogun Warriors with it too? Because Monk was writing that licensed property also.
And there were house ads for it in the book, but the characters did not actually appear.
Okay, I wasn't sure about that. But, yeah, it's really – it's Herb Trimpe. I mean, doing what Herb Trimpe does best, you know, drawing, you know, fantastic machines and, you know, the creatures. And, you know, I always loved how Trimpe would draw shield technology, things like that. So it's a really fun series. When I think of Marvel late 70s, you know, books like that are always, you know, bring a smile to my face. So
yep, I know it's a special time for you as a comics reader.
Indeed. Anything else you want to talk about stuff you're reading right now?
Probably not. It's all pretty much just time bubble fodder. you know that. Let me add to something you just said, though, Chris. Sure. I'll agree that Trimpe did design some pretty cool monsters for that Godzilla series, but this may be a controversial opinion, but I don't think he draws a very good Godzilla at all. The limbs are proportioned strangely. His lower abdomen is a little too bulbous. His eyes are red and lacking pupils, so he can't really express himself very well. His teeth are too sharp and big. His head is shaped a little bit too oblongly. He just kind of looks like a big, overweight Tyrannosaurus. Certainly compared to...
No, I'll say this. Trimpe's Godzilla did have a bit of a paunch. I would agree with that. But I do have a great affection and nostalgia for that rendition of the character. But there are far worse controversies in life in our country today. So I think you're safe with that one.
Whether or not the late Herb Trimpe draws a good Godzilla, yeah. But anyway, I've weighed in on the issue. So let the debate explode on the forums or not, as degrees.
A couple things. I'm sorry. I apologize, my friend.
No, you go ahead, Chris.
I read a couple things last night I wanted to just mention. I raved several times in recent episodes about the Planet of the Apes Ursus miniseries written by David Walker. And I read the last issue yesterday evening. I'm not going to spoil it. I mean, if you've seen Beneath the Planet of the Apes, you know how it ends, essentially. But because, you know, Walker takes you to those final climactic scenes of the movie, but he puts a different twist on it because it's more from Ursus's perspective. And I got to say, a deeply moving miniseries where, again, you take a character that has always looked cool, but they didn't have much time to do much with him because, you know, everybody dies at the end of Beneath the Planet of the Apes. And Walker really explores the backstory. He creates a backstory for Ursus that is just rooted in real pathos. I mean, he makes him into more than just a really cool looking action figure with an awesome helmet, into a very sad and tragic figure. Maybe my miniseries of the year. We'll see how the rest of the year plays out in terms of reading. But definitely one of the best Planet of the Apes comics I've read since Boom has had the license. I also read the last issue of the classic, already classic to me anyway, Killer Be Killed miniseries by the team of Brubaker, Phillips, and Breitweiser. Again, this the final installment of their Vigilante story. Again, don't want to spoil this. People haven't read this because it's only 20 issues and it's over. Again, I love when the creator-owned books come to a conclusion. Gripping from start to finish. Love the way they ended it. Definitely, I think, some of the best work of Sean Phillips' career. I'm sure they'll release the whole thing in a deluxe hardcover, as they do with all their work. because they're all Finite Stories, highest recommendation. I'm very excited because they're doing a sequel to The Fade Out, which I think is one of the best works they've done, which is their take on sort of the underbelly of like Hollywood land in the 1940s, post-World War II. Have you read The Fade Out, Murd?
No, I never read any of it.
Okay, I'll lend you my copy. One of the best stories I've read in comics in the past several years, easily. You know, hands down. And go ahead, Murd, I'm sorry.
Is this the first time Brubaker and Phillips have revisited one of their crime series?
No, they've done several. The criminal series has had several installments, and there are connections between all of them to some degree. So they've returned to criminal, but this is the first time they're returning to the Fade Out world. Cause some of the same characters will be in the new story arc. So next time I see you, if you're up for it, I'll bring you the hardcover and you can borrow it. If you want to read a tremendous crime noir rooted in, you know, sort of that old Hollywood, it doesn't get better than this.
Well, I must say I do like what I've seen from this creative team on Kill or Be Killed. Is Betty Breitweiser the colorist of that series also?
Yes, she is.
All right. Color me in.
My friend, it'll be soon be in your hands.
Thank you, Dave.
You bet, brother. And let's see, what else have I read? Really enjoying it's ending now, and Deemer mentioned this in his own way before, but Christopher Priest's run on Justice League was immensely fun. You know, as always, he explores some of the political ramifications of the Justice League and their role in the world, and, you know, I really dug that. The Deathstroke Batman storyline going on in Priest's Deathstroke run, again, they're questioning what is the parentage of Damian? Is it Slade or is it Bruce? Utterly gripping, really fun, especially because he explores a longstanding sort of, I don't know if you call it a friendship, but it's a professional relationship between Alfred and Wintergreen, which is really interesting. So that's been a hoot. Again, like Deemer, I got a big pile on my nightstand of stuff I got to get through, and that's one of my goals this summer, is to catch up with a lot of things. But a lot of great books out there to read, and so many different genres to explore now. So even as comics, at least from my perspective as both a former retailer and a reader, seem to be shrinking in terms of readership, the quality is and variety is as magnificent as ever. So, anything else, my brother, or we shot our bolt?
I believe the bolt has been shot, Chris.
All right, we'll clear out the breach. And again, we don't have all our bells and whistles for this episode. We're trying a new format. Using a Skype recorder because none of us are in the studio right now. So, and also, you know, we don't have Shane in his redoubtable role as the guy who reads off all the closing information. I'm sure we'll have that next time. But again, thank you as always for all the donations to the show. They're always immensely appreciated. They really do help. So thanks again. And you can reach out to us on Facebook, Twitter, email, and, you know, phone call to let us know what you think, and of course always on the forums where Murd of course will post this episode, and you can respond to all the sundry topics we've addressed here. So
if you'd like, Chris, I'm prepared to read Shane's usual spiel.
Oh, Murd, clutch, go for it, my friend, please.
It's what I do, Chris. It's what I do. If Shane can't be Shane, I'm the next best thing. And Shane, if you're listening to me, I look forward to hearing what you have to say about Retro Fan Number One, because this magazine seems like it's very much for you and for Pants, even more than it is for Chris and for me.
Indeed.
So, as Shane would say, were he here, if you'd like to send us an email, the address is comicgeekspeak@gmail.com. If you'd like to leave a voicemail, the number to call is 267-702-6642. You can like us on Facebook. You can follow us on Twitter, where our handle is comicgeekspeak. You can visit the comicforums.vanillacommunity.com, the aforementioned forum, where there will be a talkback thread for this episode. You can share your thoughts with us on all those topics we've broached during the preceding recording, and also talk back about many other episodes of the podcast, or get into discussions with your fellow CGS listeners and comics fans about variety of other geeky topics not directly related to the podcast. It's usually a good time getting into dialogues with some good folks over there. We'd like to thank everyone who has supported the show through donations in the recent past or long ago. We really appreciate it. The show would not be what it is today without your assistance. And we are, as always, uniting the world's mightiest heroes, one listener at a time.